And each of those is more, sometimes twice as expensive as the one house that was torn down. I have many examples. I've canvassed the neighborhood. This is what's happening in the real world. I hope you can see this. It is with my written testimony. This is a darling little bungalow on Southeast 49th Avenue. It was amazingly sold to a developer for $620,000, way over market. What was built in its place is two lovely modern style homes, taller than the rest of the neighborhood, completely out of character. How much are these selling for each? $800,000 each. This does not create affordability in the neighborhood. All of this is used as comparables by the real estate agents, and pretty soon every house in the block is going to be worth $620,000. Here's another one. 4513 Southeast Madison Street, about four blocks from my house across Hawthorne. You can't really see, but behind the trees is a darling little affordable bungalow. It was sold to a developer in July of last year for $500,000. Again, over market. This does not fit in our neighborhood. R25 zoning is going to destroy the Richmond area. It's going to destroy the Sunnyside neighborhood. And 20 years from now, this lovely neighborhood where we all live is going to be gone. And people are going to say, there's a neighborhood here? And look at this now 20-year-old housing that was shoddily built. I was a construction lawyer. I know what's being put up is not going to have a useful life of 100 years.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Yeah, you've beautifully capsulized the problem. Thank
it
you.
Is a problem.
Thank you very much.
Huge problem. Thank you.
The next three are Ruth Adkins, Arlene Kimura, and Tim Ramos. And they'll be followed by Travis Phillips, Jim Warren, and Mike Crean.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales and commissioners. For the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm with Oregon Opportunity Network. We're a statewide association of affordable housing and community development nonprofits. Also, on a personal note, I've been a homeowner in Portland since 1989. So first off, I just want to appreciate the incredibly hard work of staff and the volunteers on the Planning and Sustainability Commission and everyone involved in this massive and historic project. I'm here today to ask you to support changes that will encourage density and the development of affordable housing wherever possible. I have two specific comments, but just, you know, in general, we know that neighbors in many parts of the city are upset about the pace of change, and then particularly in historic areas, they want to preserve the character of their neighborhood. But with the housing emergency that we're facing and the growth that is projected to continue into the future, we need all neighborhoods to accept growth through increased density and to be willing to share the opportunities in their wonderful Portland neighborhoods with new residents, particularly those with low and moderate incomes who will otherwise be shut out or displaced. The best character of Portland includes values like smart growth, good design, and most of all, being welcoming and inclusive for all. So two specific pieces within this massive package before you. One, we ask that you would support, this is item, I believe, M42. It's supporting upzoning to mixed use on a stretch of North Fremont. And this would allow for mixed use projects that could include density bonuses for affordable housing. This would help with avoiding additional displacement of African American residents and businesses. The second piece is asking you to oppose the downzoning of Northwest. I believe Commissioner Smith alluded to this in his comments earlier. This is a swath of about 27 blocks of Northwest Portland that would be downzoned from the currently allowed 4-to-1 FAR to 2-to-1. This would undermine the city's intent to increase the availability of affordable housing and provide equitable access. So we request that you pull that one, and you'll be hearing more about the specific project that has been, that would be blocked because of this change.
Oh, good. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please do let us know. Thank you. Welcome. Oh, Arlene, sorry, you're next.
I can wait.
No, go ahead.
Right. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Commissioners. May Harrells. I'm here on behalf of the East Portland Action Plan to ask that you expand the ban on drive-throughs to include all the CE areas, or conversely, make more CE areas that are not east of 80th Avenue. The map on the testimony that I have handed in earlier shows that there's more than enough drive-throughs east of 80th. We don't need any more. Unfortunately, it is our land use pattern allows for bigger lots and has more commercial areas, and we think that this is not getting to the Portland ideal of community building, getting people to out of their cars and walking through their neighborhoods. And so we ask that you support a ban on all drive-throughs, including in the CE zone, for new ones. The existing ones should be allowed to stay, and if they need to be fixed, fine. But I think we don't need any more additional drive-throughs. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission, Council. For your record, Tim Ramos. I'm here today to speak to the proposal to substantially reduce available FAR through a large part of Northwest Portland and its impact on housing, and not just theoretical impact, but on the impact on a specific project, 160 units of low-income elderly housing, including units designed for citizens with special needs. This is a project proposed by Northwest Housing Alternatives, and the developer tells me that the project will not survive the loss of one-half the FAR on the site. You will recall this site from a couple of years ago when Gerding Edlund and the owners, Mark O'Donnell and I, brought to you a proposal that was expensively detailed multifamily housing. We needed a demolition permit, which was not granted by the council, and the conversation that day revolved around two important matters of public policy. One was protection of the historic contributing property there, and the other was the contribution to affordable housing. So with the help of, after that, with the help of Northwest Pilot Project, we sat down and worked with Northwest Housing Alternatives, and they have developed a plan to save that building and to provide 160 units of housing for senior low-income individuals. That project is the one I'm here to advocate for and to point out that, as you know, those are very difficult projects to finance efficiently and to make work. And in this case, loss of half the FAR will downsize the project to a point where it simply won't work. This is a project that is being located at a place where it should be, a walkable neighborhood where the city and the region have spent substantial resources on transportation infrastructure. It's the kind of place where this housing should be located. And without your help, it won't happen. So I would appreciate your attention to this issue.
Remus, can I ask you a question? You'll get your full amount of time. But so we're getting a lot of emails and letters and things and testimony that generally supports your position in this. And I'm hearing from affordable housing advocates, all kinds of people. So the question I have is timing. Assuming the council agree with you, is Northwest Housing Alternatives under the gun in terms of the sequencing of their work on this and development? I mean, is there a time that you and others would prefer we decide this question?
Let me ask this another way.
Actually,
I was going to ask the same question.
I'm going to defer to my colleague who will put it in plain English.
Okay. It was my understanding that the comprehensive plan doesn't go into effect till 2018. So if this project is already under more than just a twinkle in your eye, won't it be able to be done under the current zoning?
I would hope so. But the problem is...
Oh, is that what you were trying to ask, Commissioner?
Well, it was actually, you made it seem even... You dressed up my question, and it became even more grand, so thank you. But that's one part, and the second part is, what is the timing issue here?
With good luck, that would happen. But we've all been involved in trying to build affordable housing projects.
So you're looking for certainty over time. Because, as we know, having survived the worst recession in our lifetime, the market could change, and there could be some delay, in which case the uncertainty kicks in... Once LUBA presumably adopts the comprehensive plan.
If I could just make a very brief point. I believe Martha McLennan, the executive director of Northwest Housing Alternatives, is out of town this week, but she's planning to come next week, so she'll have additional detail. But I think it's that certainty piece, as well as other projects in the future that could potentially be developed in this area.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? You're using this as an example, but it what you're really asking about is underlying, do you respect what the Planning Sustainability Commission recommended, or do you ask us to do something else?
That's a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one further point to emphasize something Chris Smith mentioned, and that is if the Council were to decide to implement the proposed policy of reducing FAR in this area, he urged that you take a very careful look at the map. And the map, as you will see, is a kind of checkerboard patchwork. And there probably is room to make some specific decisions on particular blocks. And I would urge you to do that on this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's proceed.
Next three are Travis Phillips, Jill Warren, and Mike Crean. And they'll be followed by Michael Foster, Sam Stuckey, and Bruce Sawyer, or Peter Fry for Bruce Sawyer.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Council members. Thanks for having us here today. I'm Travis Phillips, and I understand that the current growth in population and related increase in development may make many nervous about the pace of change in our city. But I think it's worth reiterating a theme stated earlier by our Planning Commission members. The comprehensive plan must accommodate the anticipated future growth in our city while reiterating a theme stated it must accommodate anticipated future growth while retaining Portland values such as livability, affordability, and vibrant neighborhoods that are welcome to all. So I'm here in part as a resident of Northwest Portland and within the area proposed for downzoning from a floor area ratio of 4-1 to 2-1. And I ask, as the couple folks before me did, that you pull this item for a separate vote and vote no. There are a wide variety of building types and sizes within my neighborhood, and protections exist and are enhanced in the comp plan to retain the historic fabric in one of Portland's most walkable, accessible neighborhoods. Please help us keep this existing zoning to retain the livable yet compact development nature of the neighborhood. I'm also here on behalf of the organization I work for, Northeast Portland's PCRI, one that I believe all of you are familiar with. And on behalf of PCRI, I encourage you to approve Amendment M42 with similar logic. This is an area of North Fremont that is proposed to be rezoned from residential to mixed use. In particular, the change includes incentives for developing affordable housing. This can help mitigate the significant displacement that's happened in North and Northeast Portland and is still happening among historic residents, often lower-income ones of the Boise neighborhood. And I think this particular change is one that is in a neighborhood that can sustain the additional density, and the incentives will help provide affordability.
Is that Fremont and MLK?
It's Fremont between Mississippi and Vancouver.
Thanks, Travis. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name's Jill Warren, and I own two historic buildings over in the Alphabet District, and there are 10 units of rental property. Back in 1996, we had the big flood, and both of my basement units in both buildings flooded. And we did a comprehensive mitigation for all the water and discovered that the municipal pipes are made out of clay. And so we did our mitigation. Everything's been fine up until this past spring. And you probably don't remember, but in late February, early March, we had a frisky little downpour. And because of the mandate to disconnect downspouts, my neighbor's house is pretty close to one of my buildings, all the water just sheeted down into my backyard and flooded my basement unit again. And I had just moved in my tenants 5 days before. And fortunately, I had an empty unit upstairs, so I moved them and all of their belongings upstairs, and it took us, we had to replace everything, because when you have water, you have mold. And so we had to replace drywall, flooring, cabinets, because the water got in, and it took 6 weeks and cost $20,000. So the infrastructure is of concern to me, that to always have all of this, you know, increased density, it would be nice to upgrade the infrastructure system. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry you had to deal with that, but you made your point. Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Crean, and I reside at 7707 Southeast 141st Avenue in the Pleasant Valley neighborhood of the city of Portland. I'm here as a member of the board of directors for the Eastridge Park Homeowners Association to voice our strong objection to the proposed zoning map amendment, which locates a segment of a major public trail through the properties of our homeowners. The trail is part of Metro's Mount Scott Scouters Mountain Trail Loop Master Plan, completed in 2014. As presently proposed, the segments in question, as indicated on the map, would pass immediately behind and contiguous to residences in our quiet neighborhood and thereby pose a significant intrusion. Additionally, we have concerns that the trails may conflict with the city's environmental protection requirements. We believe there exists a much less intrusive alternative alignment around our property through publicly owned land. The public outreach process used in the development of the proposed trail routes by Metro had one major shortcoming which curtailed our participation. It did not include a public hearing process such as this one, whereby property owners directly impacted by a proposed trail route were formally notified and given an opportunity to voice their concerns. As a result, a consensus of support, a stated Metro goal from key stakeholders such as Eastridge Park was never obtained. In conclusion, we strongly protest the inclusion of these objectionable proposed trails into the zoning document and request the council do what should have been done as part of the planning process 2 years ago. Work with us in discussing a much less intrusive trail alignment around our Portland neighborhood that both Metro and our residents could support. Thank you.
The new one for me. I had not noticed this issue before. So is this your proposed alternative?
No, these are both. These are two options that were put into the Metro report, both of which we object to.
There's another alternative entirely, in your opinion.
We think there is, that we would like an opportunity to discuss.
Okay. Which of our bureaus has the closest connection to this? Parks, BES?
I would say Parks.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Appreciate you calling it to our attention. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Michael Foster, Sam Stuckey, and Bruce Sawyer for Peter Fry.
Thanks, Tim.
And they'll be followed by Mike Connors, Peter F. Fry, and Tamara DeRitter.
Good afternoon. Welcome. We'd like to go first.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Michael Foster. I own a half-acre property right next to Mr. Ramis' property on Southwest 58th in the Sylvan area that Joe Schaefer spoke about earlier. I also own a house and live in the neighborhood of three parcels up the hill. I built the house in 1989. I've been in the neighborhood for 25 plus years. It's in Sylvan. That area is an excellent place to live. Services, business districts, proximity makes it very attractive. It seems natural for redevelopment. And as part of that redevelopment, what we need is for the zoning, which is R20, needs to conform with your plan to get it to R2 for redevelopment. The issue here is we need to say, in order to get it redeveloped, part of the redevelopment plan is making sure we get good sidewalks in the area so that people can get down the hill to a bus stop or to light rail or in and out of the area. There are some restrictions, but we need to get what we can in sidewalks during this redevelopment process. The properties that have developed, they built their fair share of the sidewalks, and the only way we can finish it is with redevelopment of the other properties that the city already has planned for redevelopment. If you can conform the zone So for the plan, it would allow us to move ahead and start the redevelopment. I know there's a concern with the staff about somebody ducking the responsibility. Tim's explained with a covenant, very easy to get, very easy to remedy. It's a the properties that are that we'd like to redevelop both have very old homes on them. One of them doesn't even have a foundation. A third one that's going to be redeveloped has already been bulldozed. The house that I own was built in 1949. It's a two-bedroom with no historical significance. I know that that's been a hot button lately.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Are you going to submit a written testimony as well?
Yes, I can.
Okay, please do. Thank you. Yeah, it's very helpful. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Sam Stuckey. Thank you for letting me come in to speak. I'm a lifelong Portland resident. I actually grew up in historic Irvington. I currently live in the Buckman neighborhood. I live and work there. My neighbors in my building are Portlanders through and through, a teacher, a nursing student, a musician. There's actually even someone who really works at Powell's. The neighbors outside my building are also Portlanders. They live in tents, and they sleep on beds of cardboard. We are in a housing crisis, and you know it, and I know it, and everyone here knows it, and that's what I want to talk about. The city's new comp plan is, in my opinion, phenomenal, for the most part, seriously. However, there are, I think you said we're at the 90% point. That 10% has some details in it that threaten to sort of undercut the whole deal and make it more of a toothless extension of outdated zoning and unsustainable housing policy. Like I said, I grew up in Irvington. It's a beautiful neighborhood. But what makes it beautiful are not the big old houses. It's the people. And it is the schools and the parks and the block parties and the soup nights and the soccer games. And the beauty in where I grew up does not come from the fact that there's a house on the end of the block that sold for $1 million. It comes from the fact that same street has a 17-unit apartment complex with affordable units for the elderly and millennials alike. Neighborhoods like Irvington and the Alphabet District are incredible examples of the communities that can spring up when diversity and development and inclusion are encouraged, or at least they used to be. For a time, Portland actually had an incredible diversity of housing types in its urban core, greater than any city in the country. That 17-unit building was built in 1929. Current zoning would not allow such a building to be built today. Proposed zoning could bring back that piece of Portland's historic character, or it could protect the property values of a handful of Portland's wealthiest homeowners.
Could you submit the rest in writing, please?
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilman. Sorry, I have a cold.
Okay, got you at the wrong moment.
I'm Bruce Sawyer with Norris and Stevens. I'm a property manager for the company. I'm here to ask to allow older buildings to retain allowance for office in the industrial sanctuary zones. I've been talking with the Bureau of Planning, Steve Kuntz, and there are five buildings similar to what we have in the city of Portland. It's Columbia Pacific Plaza, located on 21st and Columbia Boulevard Northeast. There are two-floor office buildings. Excuse me. Square feet of 63,000 with warehouse underneath the buildings. And underneath the two buildings, it's 46,000 square feet of warehouse, total of 109,000 square feet building. Building is approximately worth $8.5 million, and the landlord doesn't want to tear the building down. Wadmo Properties Corp. purchased the building in the mid-90s. Norris and Stevens took over the management leasing in late 90s. The property was developed as a bank, bank office for savings and loans with needed warehouse for the bank. Since the loan crisis, a single warehouse office user has not been found. Property has good parking ratio, limited bus service, no max. We proposed different types of tenant uses. One was call center. Because of the out-of-core area, it was rejected by the tenant. Our previous big box tenant was GSA Census, temporary lease, GSA Portland MEPS, military processing, in the West Building that was terminated 2002, and we haven't had a tenant, one tenant in there. Multnomah County Corrections was in the East Building. They just moved out. They moved downtown and other areas of the city.
You said there are five buildings that fit this pattern, or?
Those are our tenants that were in the buildings. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Could you give the rest in writing, please?
Yeah. if you could submit that to us in writing, that you've given us enough to go on.
So okay.
Thank you very much. And that way you won't have to speak any longer. Thank you.
Next three are Mike Connors, Peter F. Fry, and Tamara DeRitter. And they'll be followed by Wendy Chung, Mark Whitlow, and Bob Lefebvre.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Go ahead, Tamara, while they're getting ready.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Very good. I'm here, Tamara DeRitter, representing Rose City Park Neighborhood Association. And the comments that I'm providing are on health and economic vitality of the TSP that is being proposed. First of all, the both Halsey Street and Sandy Boulevard are being identified as city bikeways. That's a concern for us because, you know, here we've got Sandy Boulevard that carries over a quarter of a million cars annually. That's a huge amount. And it's a major freight truck route. And then we've got Halsey, which is now being identified as an industrial street. We have, there's empirical evidence right now, scientific evidence that has proven that bicycling along major arterials in the urban areas generate harmful short-term and long-term health impacts to the cyclists. A recent publication, which is partly published by one of the folks from PSU, identifies that breath concentrations of the biomarkers of the volatile organic compounds that are inhaled were significantly higher than the background levels after riding on high traffic arterials and on path that has high exposure to industrial areas. And these markers are 100 to 200% greater than those that are on low traffic residential streets. And so with your indulgence, I'd like to look at a change in the policy to add and health impacts based on air quality to 9.5.B, which is city bikeways. Again, it would read, motor vehicle lanes and on-street parking may be removed on city bikeways to provide need for width and separated in-road facilities where compatible with adjacent land uses and only after taking into consideration the essential movement of all modes and health impacts based on air quality.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Mike Connors here on behalf of Hayden Island Enterprises. They are the owners and operator of the Hayden Island Home Manufactured Home Community, manufactured home with approximately 440 sites. We're here, I'm here to testify in opposition to the proposed city bike path on the northern end of our park, extending through the northern part of Hayden Island as part of the TSP amendment. We have several concerns. First of all, there's overwhelming opposition from not only my client, our residents in the park, but also residents in the island. And we just object to the concept of proposing a public bike path against the wishes on private property, against the wishes of the owner and the residents that live there. Secondly is the impact. If and when this bike path is built, it would require the removal of numerous manufactured homes, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 homes, because they're along the northern edge of the park. And we obviously have residents are very concerned about this. We're concerned about this. We think you should be concerned about this, given the importance of affordable housing and the recognition that this is a vital affordable housing resource. During the Planning and Sustainability Commission process, PBOT staff noted that the bike path wouldn't likely be approved unless and until the property is redeveloped. But there's a couple problems with that. Number one, there's no guarantee that it won't be developed until the property is redeveloped. In fact, in their own staff report, they quantified that as it would not likely be developed unless the property was redeveloped as a whole. That's different than saying it won't be developed. And secondly, you should be concerned about the idea of proposing something on the anticipation of the redevelopment of an affordable housing resource. The recent comp plan that you passed included a policy, policy 5.37, that encourages the preservation of manufactured home parks to go to that very need. And we think that the concept of a bike path, albeit even if it isn't built until the property is redeveloped, is inconsistent with that policy.
I'm not quite sure what I think of this particular ingredient in the plan, and likewise with the portion on Hayden Bay, but and I want to talk to the planning staff further about this, but there's an existing pedestrian walkway there now, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
But there's not.
I guess I was in court too recently.
There's not an easement, right? It's just a walkway, right, on a piece of private property.
Correct. In the 2009 Hayden Island plan, there was a pedestrian path that was adopted as part of that plan. My client, the residents, weren't aware of that. But what you need to understand is what's being considered as part of the TSP amendment is an expansion of both the nature and scope of that, changing it from a pedestrian path to a bike path, extending it along to the eastern end of the island. And so what we're asking you to do is, if you're revisiting that issue as a whole,
right,
we're asking you to reconsider the concept.
I get that, but it's ironic that you lapsed into your courtroom approach, because I'm just looking at this from a legal standpoint. I don't think that this provision would ever come to bear unless the property were redeveloped and an easement were granted, right? All you have there now is a line on a map. There happens to be a walkway there, but it's a fee simple piece of real estate with a line on it, right?
Well, but there's a practical impact. First of all, we have residents who are very concerned about this.
In terms of legal and planning reality,
sure.
You got one single piece of real estate with a line on it, right? There's no easement, there's no public right to that as yet.
There's not, but understand, too, for instance, practical implications of refinancing the property. That's going to have to be disclosed, and the impact of that on the property, it's going to reduce the value of the property.
Okay, I see that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fry, welcome.
So that's Peter Finley Fry. I'm here on Columbia Plaza. You just heard from Bruce Storr about that issue. There are five buildings, according to Steve Kuntz at the Bureau of Planning, that have the same unique problem. These buildings were built back in the 1980s. In this case, was built with this savings and loan. So it's an office building over a warehouse. The office building cannot be leased to an industrial use except for industrial office, but that's not allowed outside of the downtown area because industrial office is not allowed outside of the inner city. So basically, we're asking that in these older buildings, there's a provision in the zoning code, which I'm happy to write, that would allow these office buildings to continue to be office buildings. Our argument is that they have been there for 30 years or more. They have not caused any real problems. I'm talking about traffic and that kind of impact. And we're not going to tear them down. And it does add employment density. And we're not going to get the downtown office type of user out there on Columbia Boulevard. So it's a technical zoning problem. And, in fact, it's one that I wanted to avoid because every time they have a new tenant, they have to call me and I have to do a conditional use. And I don't want to constantly be doing conditional uses. At some point, I think they should just be fine and permitted. So that's our testimony. Thank you.
Well, might want to take you up on your offer and get you to follow up with written testimony that contains your suggested code language.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We always take free help when we can get it. Thank you, Peter. All right, who's next, please?
Next, we are Wendy Chung, Mark Whitlow, and Bob Lefebvre. And they'll be followed by Eric Hovey, Brent Arend, and Chris, I believe the last name is Covrare on Upshur. Sorry.
Yes, you should.
Okay, who's ever ready first? Proceed.
Oh, she got a PowerPoint.
All right. Yeah, there we go. Do musical chairs and let her have technical support. Mark, why don't you go ahead, because that'll take a minute.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Hales, council members, Mark Whitlow for the Retail Task Force. We think you need to be concerned that the city isn't yet ready for high-density mixed use citywide from downtown to its eastern edge. The market's just not there yet. It's going to take years in some areas, especially out east. The current mode split for traffic is 80-20 auto, with PBOT's 2035 projection being only 76-24. So we have a long, long way to go to reduce reliance on the auto. That means there remains a real need to accommodate the auto during this planning period. The MUZs don't do that. They make vertical mixed use the preferred development format, and that's also true for the CE zone. It's partially auto-accommodating, mostly mixed use. So in fact, the general commercial zone doesn't have a counterpart in the MUZ zoning mix. Yet the MUZ says it's multimodal. And so we need an adjustment to provide equitable zoning for auto-accommodating businesses, including grocery. There's a food desert problem. CE zoning would be part of that fix. But under this plan, all existing auto-accommodating developments become non-conforming. They're not favored for redevelopment. That causes blight, stagnation. It's bad for the local economy. Owners and operators hate it. We addressed this issue last time. You gave us policy 7.17 saying phase things in. The PSC missed that point. So we're asking three things. We've proposed a detailed CE zone map with good justification, including 28 sites requested for CE by Albertson, Safeway, Fred Meyer, McDonald's, Starbucks, and Dutch Brothers Coffee. We got 2 out of 28. On the big map, we got virtually nothing. Number two, please revise the CE zone purpose statement to make it auto-accommodating. And three, adopt our proposed drive-through prohibition map and treat existing drive-throughs as allowed instead of non-conforming. Thank you.
And you've submitted that proposed map?
Yes, and I'll have a detailed thick stack for you before the end of this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Who'd like to go next?
I've been elected.
Okay.
Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Bob Lefeber with Commercial Realty Advisors. I'm a retail broker here in town. CRA just celebrated its 20th anniversary of business, representing retail developers and retailers throughout the state of Oregon and our office here in Portland. Our office is fortunate to represent a number of grocers, a couple of which are very large format affordable ones. Throughout this process, we have pushed for more CE zoning because it is the only auto-accommodating zone with which these retailers absolutely require to locate in. The PSC virtually ignored our request, and the end result is it will exacerbate, I believe, the food desert problem we have in the city, particularly for affordable grocery. It's going to cause an increase in VMTs as urban residents continue to drive out to the edges of the cities to shop on weekends, particularly for those affordable goods. And, of course, it will prevent hundreds of jobs that these retailers would bring from ever occurring here. We also ask for greater use of CE zonings to allow new drive-throughs and quick vehicle servicing. The drive-throughs that for many of these businesses, obviously if you're at Dutch Brothers, it's 100% of your business, but for many of the other ones, it is a material impact on their sales and their profitability. And without them, many of them are not likely to come. It is also important for elderly, for handicapped, and families with small children. It is a necessary convenience. I was just with a woman yesterday who said she drives way out of her way to go to this particular outlet that happens to have a drive-through. We recognize the trade-off with preserving urban form in centers in our meetings with you, Mayor Hales, and traditional walkable districts. However, the PSC chose to implement a ban east of 80th in areas that are primarily auto-oriented. Why? Because some fast food restaurants sell some unhealthy food choices? I think people need to make their own food choices personally. And also, fast food restaurants are evolving to have more healthy choices as a result of consumer demand. And what about all the other uses that get thrown out with the bathwater? All the other drive-throughs for banking, gas stations, et cetera. I please ask you to look at both of these issues with greater detail, and we'd love to participate if needed to any further meetings on it. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. Wendy, welcome.
Mayor, commissioners, I'm here to testify on behalf of the Northwest District Association. I'm Wendy Chung, for the record, Vice President of the Northwest District Association. And I'm testifying today specifically about one portion of Task 5, early implementation, the RH zoning issue in the Alphabet Historic District in Irvington. As Chris Smith mentioned, and I think Commissioner Novick commented at the last hearing that Chris Smith is the smartest guy he knows, and I agree with that. He's a smart guy. He mentioned that the procedural posture of this issue, which came to you, and I'm actually going to discard most of my prepared remarks because I have to respond to some of the things that were testified to earlier, but I think there's been some sort of confusion because we're not asking for downzoning. We're asking for a correction or a truth in zoning. So you'll notice, for instance, that under the current code, and this answers Commissioner Fritz's question, I think, to Tim Ramos, which is under the current code, historic overlays supersede base zones. And so in your findings, this body, and I wish Commissioner Fish hadn't left because I believe it was he who specifically opined that the historic overlay with this particular parcel that we're talking about as the example, which I don't think is a particularly good example given the fact that this body, Landmarks, BPS, BDS, and the Northwest District Association all agree that 4-1 is incompatible and could never be built here. So I think that the affordable housing argument is a red herring in this particular case because of the fact that it could never be achieved. So back to the amendment itself, one thing I want to point out is the reason that it's incompatible with, and this is BDS's own map, but you'll see that each of these parcels above the green line are the ones that BPS has recommended down, changing from 4-1 to 2-1. Most of them have little black dots in them, you'll see, and those little black dots are historic landmarks. So this idea of losing 27 blocks of housing and I don't know how many millions of square feet were in the paper that we were going to lose. It's disingenuous at best because most of those parcels contain historic properties. We are, in fact, asking you to implement the comp plan as you've adopted in June, specifically policy 4.49, which demands that we resolve conflicts in historic districts and refine the base zoning in those districts.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving us your testimony in writing. That's very helpful.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
The next three are Eric Hovey, Brent Arend, and Chris Creever. And they'll be followed by Timothy on, sorry, I can't read the last name, and Dennis Harper.
Good afternoon.
And Doug Klotz.
Good afternoon.
Haven't seen you in a while. Welcome.
Yes. For the record, my name is Eric Hovey, economic and development consultant speaking on behalf of the Retail Task Force. Analysis that we have prepared and submitted in testimony to the PSC yields three observations for consideration with your deliberations for mixed-use zones. First, outside of the central city, Portland is under-retailed, especially in East Portland, where grocery choices remain scarce and expensive for residents. The lack of adequate and affordable full-service grocery means that residents must travel further to shop or use convenience stores as a less healthy alternative. Second, the city's food deserts are also the places where building rents are often subpar, making it more challenging for investment in providing affordable goods and services to pencil. Especially for day-to-day needs like grocery, pharmacy, restaurants, banking, and personal services, auto-accommodating use is important for customer convenience and for business viability. And third, while transit, walking, and biking are on the rise, auto use still accounts for more than 80% of the trips outside the central city. Development standards that work in higher density areas with good transit service run the risk of proving counterproductive for residents living in areas with the poorest access to quality, healthy, and affordable shopping choices. Expanding CE zoning for auto accommodating development and phased implementation of mixed use zones is urged to avoid the risk of disinvestment in those areas of Portland where retail services are needed most. Phased implementation becomes pivotal to encourage investment in sync with what the market will support today as well as over the next 10, 20 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You're going to submit that as well?
Yeah.
Good. Appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Brent Arendt. I'm a traffic engineer, and I've worked for a number of large retailers throughout the metro area. So I think I have a pretty good handle on how things work as far as needing to have the auto accommodating uses and their customers needing to be able to travel there by auto. I testified both before council and the PSC earlier on these issues and provided examples. One was the Costco that had been proposed in Northwest Portland and indicated their existing customers have to drive out of town and what that VMT impact is. A lot of extra miles for Portland residents to drive out of town to go to those other stores currently, where it'd be nice if they could stay in town, not to mention the employment and the tax dollars that would stay in the city if you're able to locate one of those uses. And I also mentioned about a lot of the larger retailers have located along the 82nd corridor, and people that live between downtown and 82nd, they often drive out that way and then back home, driving extra miles out of their way to buy their groceries. And you may be familiar with the Winco that recently opened at Powell and 82nd. I think the only reason that could open today is because it was an existing facility. I think it was built as a Food for Less originally. And that place is doing great business. I've seen it operate, and most people are driving by car. And as was mentioned before, a lot of the lower-income people, they shop at these places, and they need to get there, and they go once per week. And going by auto is the best option for them. They can go. They can get everything they need in one trip, as opposed to the smaller, higher-end grocery stores, for example. A lot of these people can't afford to shop there, but that's what the zoning is kind of limiting for in the city, is these higher-end, smaller grocers that don't serve those people well.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Commissioners, thanks for having me. My name is Chris Creever, and I own a property at 2580 Northwest Upshur Street in the Northwest District. And I'm here to strongly object to the downzoning proposal for my particular piece of property. Upshur is located in two vibrant employment centers, Northwest 23rd, Northwest Industrial District. We're right near the streetcar. We've got bus routes on Vaughan, shopping, restaurants, and a walkability score of 95. Clearly, we're in a housing crisis, and limiting the ability to potentially build affordable housing at my location is something that I deem counterproductive. Currently, I'm surrounded by some Section 8 housing on the between 26th and 27th and Upshur. And I have a unique piece of property that you could develop and take advantage of the current CM zone. Currently, we're looking at going from CM to CM1. I have a 45-foot height restriction today, and that is being threatened to go down to 35 feet in the CM1. So going from a medium-scale commercial mixed use to a small-scale commercial mixed use is something that I strongly object to. Looking at the map, it is a checkerboard proposal, and when I look at Northwest 26 and Thurman behind me, one block closer to the core Northwest residential neighborhood, is a laundromat, which is still designed to say CM1. I'm in a situation, or CM2, excuse me, and I'm in a situation where I'm much closer to the Northwest Industrial District, where three to four stories apartment buildings and residential buildings are of the norm. I'm right around the corner from the Vaux, Savior, and the Savior Flats apartment building. So I request that we revisited this, and hopefully we can keep my zone either CM or go to CM2. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Timothy Ray, Dennis Harper, and Doug Klotz. And they'll be followed by Joselle Johnson, Vicky Skyra, and Scott McLean.
Right. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Mayor, Councilman. I'm here for a small
piece. Just put your name in the record first.
Timothy Ray. I'm here for a small piece of property located on Williams Avenue. The address is 3300 North Williams. We participated in some of the community discussions regarding zoning for this area. It was zoned R1. Unfortunately, it remains R1. I have submitted at least my letter of explanation, along with a letter from the City Environmental Services. We got one of the original first grants for brownfield remediation. This was a dry cleaning site where people had been literally pouring the chemicals out on the ground. It's one of the most, it was deemed one of the most contaminated sites in Northeast Portland. We've been vacuuming and aerating the soil for the last 2 years. As an R1 zoning, we may not be able to put housing on the first floor because of the extent of the contamination, and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, they kind of rule any kind of particulate matter for residential housing. When you look at the map, we're surrounded by CM2, and we thought for sure that we would be getting the same zoning as the rest of the properties around us. It's kind of bizarre when you look at the map. It's both to the north and the south of us on Williams, it's CM2, and then there's this one small piece of R1. That's us. We would like to see this just be contiguous with the rest of the CM2. And rather than going through sort of the uncertainty of not being able to develop it with the residential on the first floor, I think we'd go along with the mixed use, which was the intended development from years back.
Okay, thank you. The site's vacant now, is that right?
It is vacant.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Harper. Upon reviewing the miscellaneous zoning amendments proposed draft June 2016, I was alarmed to find that a vast swath of Northwest Portland was zoned RH with FAR of 4-1. Almost all of the affected area occurs within the historic Alphabet District east of Northwest 21st Avenue. Subsequently, city staff proposed that only the southeast quadrant of the Alphabet District retain the RH zoning with FAR of 4-1. As a longtime owner of a home listed as a primary contributing building in the southeast quadrant of the Alphabet District, I urge City Council to designate all of the historic Alphabet District at FAR 2-1. The RH zoning with the maximum FAR of 4-1 is a threat to the future of the southeastern quadrant of the historic Alphabet District. Property owners and developers will certainly be enticed to demolish smaller historic buildings in the district in order to replace them with larger, taller buildings up to FAR 4-1. I request that City Council reduce the FAR to 2-1 in all areas of the historic Alphabet District in order to eliminate the owner-developer enticement to tear down and build bigger. Furthermore, the Historic Resource Protection Overlay Zone and the Plan District require development in the area to be compatible with existing patterns in historic context. So a maximum FAR of 2-1 would be a better fit for properties currently with no structures, such as parking lots. Tall, out-of-scale new buildings near such prominent older buildings as St. Mary's Cathedral, the Northwest Children's Theater, and Trinity Episcopal Cathedral would damage the character of the historic Alphabet District. If you are assuming the RH zoning with a maximum FAR of 4-1 is necessary to sustain adequate supply of housing units in the city, then refer to page 120 of the miscellaneous zoning amendments. The commentary states that due to the large surplus of residential capacity in the city, the code provisions for no net loss of housing and a housing pool are to be deleted. So under the proposed zoning amendments, a reduction of FAR to 2-1 in the historic Alphabet District would not be in conflict with the requirement to maintain residential capacity in Northwest Portland. So in conclusion, I urge you to support the reduction of FAR to 2-1 throughout the historic Alphabet District. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Doug, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Doug Klotz. Thank you for having me here. I support the majority of the proposed code and mapping changes. I support Portlanders for Parking Reform and their effort to remove parking requirements in the mixed-use zones. Now that we have a parking permit system waiting and ready to go, we have a growing housing crisis and we have the White House advocating for eliminating parking requirements. This is the time to do that and remove parking requirements for all mixed-use zones projects. We should trade parking requirements for more affordable housing. As a member of the Citizen Advisory Committee for the mixed-use zones, I support the CMC 1, 2, and 3 concept, but I'm concerned about the reduced base FARs in those zones. The inclusionary housing will take over that and, you know, may encourage the use of the bonuses, in depending on where the in lieu fee ends up. But we should also look specifically at what happens on 5,000 square foot lots. 19 units could be built on these lots, which doesn't trigger the inclusionary housing. It could be built on these lots, and it is currently being built in our neighborhood, in the Richmond neighborhood now. But the 2.5 to 1 base FAR that's proposed is too small to allow that to happen. And those may not pencil out, so we'll lose all those units. I would raise the base FAR in CM2 from 2.5 to 3.5 for lots smaller than 7,000 square feet, just to address that one issue. I support the ban on drive-throughs east of 80th. Commissioner Andre Baugh made a very eloquent argument at the Planning Commission as to the effects of all the drive-through facilities out in the neighborhood out there, and I support, you know, his reasoning on that and what you've heard here from Chris Smith. At all existing drive-throughs, I support requiring the businesses serve anyone at any time that they're open, not just those in cars. In other words, if the drive-thru is open, owners should provide a safe way for those on foot or cycling to also buy a burger or use the ATM. That is a proposed amendment. I mean, that's a proposed in the plan.
Okay, thank you. You've obviously given us a great deal here.
Oh, yes.
So we will review.
Right.
Thank you very much. Okay, who do we have next?
Our Joselle Johnson, Vicky Scaria, and Scott McLean. And then the last two in this first session are Brad Hotchalter and Pearl Mead.
Great. Welcome. I can't remember who's first, so you probably
I'll
do.
Jump in. So my name's Joselle Johnson, and greeting to Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you. I am actually the face of an individual resident in the Northwest Alphabet District who owns my own home and wanted to speak on the FAR changes from 4.2 to 2.2. I actually support this. I purchased my home in 95 because of the historical nature of the activity. One of the things that I have seen specific to my neighborhood, and I'm on the corner of 18th and Hoyt, is Park 19. So we were able to see the first large building go in there, and it completely cut us off from the park. As we continue to see these large developments come in, we change the character of the neighborhood. I have long-term tenants. I have tenants over a decade. So in some cases, I am affordable housing. I'm able as an individual person to maintain that community and to engage in it. What I'm concerned about is the legislation by headline. I want us to work together as a community and ensure that what we have agreed upon, we put forth and we don't cherry pick what we're doing. If I hear one more developer tell me it doesn't pencil out, the rules are there. The rules are there from the start. As an individual homeowner, I have to follow those. What is different? Why can't we keep that so that we're consistent? I believe this recommendation supports that, so it clearly lays out the outlines of what is available and what isn't, and stops getting these people coming in and saying, well, it would pencil out if I had another 50 feet or another 2,000 acres, or if I'm being facetious there. So what I'm looking at, again, on the affluence, I'm a little bit concerned that affluence regarding having to chain down my front door, my front porch furniture really doesn't count, and the fact that I can't leave anything in my car. We're a neighborhood in transition. I'm a community member that wants to engage in there. I'm living there. I'm tired of people coming in and purchasing property, creating things, and not being in the community. I support the Alphabet District. I support the community as an over 20-year resident. This is not supporting that community.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, I'm Vicky Scria. I'm pleased to be here, and thank you so much for hanging in there with this long day of testimony. I'm a property owner that's directly impacted by the FAR change in the RH from 4:1 to 2:1 in the Alphabet Historic District, and I propose the change that's recommended by the PSB. I see it as, as Wendy Chung explained, as a technical correction that aligns the base zone with the overlay requirements, and the real issue is the historic overlay, which kind of tampers down what can be grown. I think that historic preservation